television. Times have become very much degraded. And this movement is more important than ever. When we were in that storefront, and looking back a little later when I got to from Buffalo Purview, I understood that we were doing the most important work in the world in that little dinky storefront. It's a fact of history. I was planning on getting a master's degree in social work, but when I met Joe Podbot, I understood this is the welfare work. My career is finished because I there's nothing I can do for anyone except give them this, what I understood from Joe Podbot. And Christ said that himself. Christ, the great Vaishnava avatar, when he was asked what's the first commandment, he didn't mention any of the ten. He said the first one is to love the Lord thy God with all thy mind, heart, and soul. And the second is like unto it, love thy neighbor as thyself. And that second one is preaching. If you love someone, someone loves you, what do you want from them? The greatest gift they can give you. And that's preaching. You see? So anyone here who has the slightest understanding of anything that they've heard from Srila Prabhupada, it's your duty to explain it to someone else to the best of your capacity without changing anything. And that's the secret. That's the secret of the Parampara system. When I went to Buffalo, the devotees were so kind. They were sending me mimeographed copies of Srila Prabhupada's Gita that I hadn't finished yet, and I was giving class on it. There was nothing to change. I just gave a class of whatever they sent me. And that's the secret of this movement. It consists of a disciplic succession of disciples who took the vow not to change the meaning. And therefore, when Srila Prabhupada did his Bhagavad Gita, there were all of the 200 or 300 or 400 were obviously in the trash bin. Because it's his Gita that made the devotees. So, I didn't, unfortunately, have that much association with Ramananda, but I tried to follow his example and his dedication to Srila Prabhupada, his determination to serve his spiritual master. I don't think there's ever been a better example in the history of the ISKCON. And very proud to be able to speak on his behalf to you, and I hope that you'll take something away, an understanding that Ramananda gives us. And that understanding is that we have a master. We are servants, and these collars mean we're not stray dogs. We've got dog collars, and we've got a master, and we have to serve that master. And what does that master want? It's all in his books what he wants. That's the secret. For whatever days we have left in our lives, we should understand our mission. This is not just a Sunday affair. It's a way of life. So that's all I can think of right now, but I request that. One other thing. Oh, I'm sorry. One other thing. I just want to show you this. This is a rare thing. This is a certificate of initiation in International Society for Christian Consciousness. I took it off my wall. Srila Prabhupada intended that this be done for all his initiated disciples, but it took so much time, it's all hand done. And in the four corners of Govinda Dasi, so this was done about 68, because I didn't get this to 68. She's got her drawings here, and this is all hand-painted and hand-done. So Srila Prabhupada canceled it, but somehow I got one. And I'm going to pass this around.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Because we have a list of devotees to speak, and please be considerate. Just want to mention one thing, that when Brahmananda was staying with me, he said that not too long ago he was driving in Hollywood, Florida. He was driving Hollywood, Florida, and he got lost.
Remember, on those days, we didn't have GPS. And so he stopped to ask somebody for directions, and the other guy was also lost. And the guy said, Brahmananda, it's you. It was the owner of the recording studio that recorded this record in New York. Brahmananda hadn't seen him for decades. Shesha Prabhu, please. Buddha Vavana, come on.
I'm very thankful to Rupanuga Prabhu because he first sent me to Africa to join Prabhupada there in Brahmananda. And Brahmananda Prabhu, we had heard in New York that there were two devotees that were traveling, I think, through Pakistan, and that they had been shot and killed by some soldiers there or something. But then we found, and we thought maybe it was Brahmananda and Gargamuni, but we actually found out that they weren't shot. And Brahmananda had been traveling through Pakistan, and he was actually put in jail for about, I think, 5 days. I think Jagani Bas told me who was traveling with him. But when we went to, myself and Hare Kripa, we went to Africa, and it's been 44 years, so it's a lot to remember. But when we got there, what happened is that we arrived at the airport, and this is the first time I saw Brahmananda. He had a big smile on his face when me and Hare Kripa got off the plane, and he was there with Chaivana Prabhu and Bhavananda. So I had just seen Bhavananda in New York. He said he was going to India. So I was surprised to see that he was there in Nairobi. So we all piled in this car, this small car. Brahmananda sat up front, and we squeezed in the back three other devotees while Bhavananda drove the car. And I was hoping that we would get there in one piece because he was driving that car so fast. I thought we might crash. But what happened is that as soon as we got there, Brahmananda told me, Prabhupada wants to see you upstairs, you and Hare Kripa. So we went into the house and went upstairs, and Prabhupada made that famous statement in the Lila Amrita about how your ancestors were taken away from here as slaves 400 years ago. He had a huge smile on his face and said, but just see how you have returned as masters. I thought, how poetic, how can someone say something so poetic, you know? But I was always enthralled by Prabhupada's presence, and Brahmananda Prabhu actually kind of ushered me into Prabhupada's presence so many times. And so what happened was, like, the first day or the second day, we went to the Jomo Kenyatta parade, which was down one of the main streets, and we were chanting. So we were chanting, and some of the African people who had drums, they were chanting with their drums with us while we were chanting Hare Krishna. So then Brahmananda decided that we should go near the road where the parade was coming, and he told us that we're going to just have kirtan here. So we were chanting, and all of a sudden, one of the, either he was a soldier or a policeman, he came up and he had a baton in his hand, and he said, stop this. So Brahmananda looked at me, because I was playing mridanga, and he looked at me and said, with a big smile on his face, and said, keep chanting. So I said, okay. So I kept playing, and then the soldier, I think he was a policeman, said, I said, stop this. And Brahmananda looked at me again and said, keep chanting. It was like Brahmananda was the boldest devotee that I've ever known in the movement. And so he looked at me and said, keep chanting. So I kept chanting, and the soldier said, I said, stop this. He became very angry, the policeman, I guess. And Brahmananda said, keep chanting. So I kept chanting, and he took his baton, and he swung and hit the mridanga. And I think I was very low-key devotee, but I wanted to choke him after that. You don't hit the Madanga. So and it didn't break because Hari Vasara Prabhu, when we were in New York, he had fiberglassed it with fiberglass glass, stripping. And so then Brahmananda looked at me and said, okay, you can stop playing. So that was just one story. And then what happened is that one day I was standing in the yard at the house. Brahmananda had given me the service of making a garland for Prabhupada every day. I get these champak flowers off a tree that was out in the yard there and make a garland for Prabhupada every day. And so one day I was standing in the yard and I had gone away from the house, and Brahmananda came up to me and said, he says, wow, Aravinda's really getting a sauce, huh? And I said, yeah, because what had happened is that we had, instead of Bhagavatam class, we had that book, I think it's Dialectical Spiritualism, where Prabhupada would be going through different philosophers, and that was our class. He would expound, as Sharma Sundar, who was brilliant, he would be asking questions of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would be answering and giving a philosophy and based on different philosophers. And so what had happened is that Aravinda had supposedly lost the tapes. And I had never heard Prabhupada scream so loud. And he was telling him, if you don't want to do it, then I'll get someone else. And so Brahmananda had come up to me and asked me, he had told me that he had lost the tapes like that. But then Shaman Sundar said later that the tapes weren't really lost, they found them. But Prabhupada was really upset. And then one time we were I was with Brahmananda for, I don't know, maybe a year and a half to 2 years, over 10 years. First in Kenya and then in Nigeria with Akindra, Mukunda Prabhu. We used to be Kendra. And so what happened is that, I'll tell this last story, that I was sitting on a cot and in one of the rooms in the back, and I had heard that Prabhupada was on the phone, and somehow or other I was dreaming that Prabhupada was leaving, and I got up and started running through the hall, and I was thinking Prabhupada's already left. He had already gone back to India. So Hari Kripa told me that Prabhupada was on the phone talking to Brahmananda. So I went and spoke to Brahmananda. We all gathered in the office where Brahmananda was, and Brahmananda said he was talking to Prabhupada. He later informed us all that transpired with the conversation with Prabhupada. But Prabhupada was he didn't like to talk on the phone from what I understood. But what had happened is that there were two girls in London, the Sarna girls, who had left their father's wishes of going to school, and they were joining the Hare Krishna movement. And so what happened is that there was a big article in London Times, and it was all about them joining the Hare Krishna movement and this problem with their father. So the father wanted to get them back. He lived in Nairobi, and what happened is that they flew, I don't know how they did it, but they flew to India. And so what happened is that there was a big article in the Hindu Times, I believe that was a paper in India, about these two girls who were at odds with their father about joining the Hare Krishna movement. So then they left there and they flew to Nairobi, where their father lived. And so Prabhupada was on the phone, and Brahmananda told us that Prabhupada said, one thing is that he had they would kind of come and get the girls from, you know, as devotees away from the temple. And Brahmananda had told Subha Vilas, who was like a huge ex-football player, to protect the girls even if their fathers come, that we are going to protect the devotees no matter what. And so what happened is that Prabhupada was on the phone, and Prabhupada explained that in Indian communities, the daughters are under the protection of their fathers. And he was like really giving so much sauce to Brahmananda about this. And he was telling him, you give those girls back to their father right away. And so what happened is Brahmananda told us that he told us that the girls had to be given back, and Prabhupada said that this is not our business as far as dealing with Indian families. And what had happened is that a couple of the Indians, Indian persons in the community were trying to get the CID, which is the Central Intelligence Department, to kick us out of the country and all those things, you know. But when Brahmananda got off the phone, it's the first time I ever saw Brahmananda shaking. Prabhupada had really given him so much sauce about this that he was really upset. And there's just one last thing. When Prabhupada came back, we were waiting for him to come back, for we have this big festival in a park, and Prabhupada was going to come. Actually, it was like 5,000 people came every day. And so I'm in the temple chanting, and all of a sudden I hear a knock at the door. So I go to the door, and all of a sudden Prabhupada's standing there, and Prabhupada was supposed to be in India. Him and Madhudvisa had come. And so I said, I offered my obeisances, and I said, Prabhupada, we didn't know you were coming. And he said, where's Brahmananda? So I went to get Brahmananda, and I would like pay money for the expression on his face. When I told, I said, Brahmananda, you won't believe it, but Prabhupada's standing at the door. He said, no, you're kidding. I said, no, I'm not. And he got up and went to the door in his lungi and shirtless and offered his obeisances to Prabhupada. But there's so many times when I was with Brahmananda that he just gave me so much information also about 61 Second Avenue or the older days, 26 Second Avenue. Gave me a lot of information about the early days of the movement. So I was very happy to be in his presence. I always thought of him as my big brother. He really took care of me. Brahmananda ki jai.
Shesha Prabhu. Is Tamohar here?
Hare Krishna. I'll just relate one incident about Brahmananda. I think the picture of that iconic person, Brahmananda, I think has been well established by the previous speakers. And that left me as a brahmachari really in awe of Brahmananda Swami. And you always see these pictures like they've been showing Brahmananda with Prabhupada here, there. He was just a very desirable to have his association. So I developed this desire to travel with him as his brahmachari servant. Now, of course, he's in Africa or India, and I'm just in America. I had no opportunity to do that, but somehow or another, by Krishna's arrangement, I did get a chance to travel with Brahmananda Swami. After Prabhupada's departure, he came. He was doing a world tour, giving everyone talks about Prabhupada and how it was to be in his association. And so I was a temple president in Philadelphia where he visited. So it was a very nice few days he was there, and then he was going on from our temple, taking Amtrak's train to Washington, D.C. And so I drove him to the train station, and I helped him with his bags and everything like that. And so because I was carrying his bags, I went on the train with him. And while I was on the train started moving. And it was by the time I could do anything, it was too late to get off. And so I got my desire fulfilled to be the brahmachari traveling with Brahmananda Swami, at least to Wilmington, Delaware, where I had to get off and somehow or other find my way back to Philadelphia. But that was part of my growth as a devotee. And when I heard the news of Brahmananda's passing, I did cry. I cried, and I felt good about doing that I could cry for him, because I realized how important he was for me in my life, for all the reasons everyone said here this evening, and for other exchanges I had with him. It seemed like every time I needed to grow as a devotee and as a person, it involved Brahmananda Swami. Even As a GBC member, I had the opportunity or the duty, let's say, not opportunity, but to be in a disciplinary mode with Brahmananda. Now, who am I, Mr. ISKCON, I think you called him, you know, at the beginning, who am I to try to discipline Brahmananda and Gargamuni? But it was a duty that I had to perform, and Brahmananda was quite gracious about my attempts to discipline him. I visited him in his room in Vrindavan a couple of years after that, just because I felt that I just can't leave it with a discipline mode with him. I got to tie up the ends. And so for the first hour or so, it was pretty tense being in that room in Vrindavan with Gargamuni and Brahmananda, you know, like giving me the sauce, you know, like, why are you here? Are you just a secret mission by the GBC? You're trying to get us this and that. Just to get through that, it took about an hour. But after that, the smile came on his face and Gargamuni's too, although his was a little slower coming. But and it was just wonderful just being there with him. Particularly, I was concerned that I see him before any, because his health wasn't very good, and I wanted to go and see him before anything happened. And so I got the opportunity to do that. But again, that was also part of my growth as a devotee, and I think that's where those tears came from when I heard the news about his leaving the world. Very auspicious departure in Vrindavan. So, Brahmananda Prabhu ki jai.
About Shama Priya Mataji? We're going to try to do as quick as possible so we can have many more devotees speak about Brahmananda. Sorry for that. I don't like to be pushy.
This will be quick. Of course, in the beginning, Brahmananda Prabhu was Brahmananda Swami, and I didn't have much association with him. One time, he came to Los Angeles, and the practice was that the Bhagavatam class would be right after Mangalartik, because then the Sankirtan devotees could go out on Sankirtan, and having heard the Bhagavatam class. So I was dressing Rukmini and Dwarkadish at that time, and he started to speak about his experiences in Africa. And Brahmananda was always magnanimous and jovial and practical. So he was saying he had a problem in Africa. He couldn't get any of the people to do service. He couldn't get the devotees to serve. So he was very disturbed about that. And he was trying to think of how he could do this. So he came up with a wonderful idea. He said, I'm going to pay them. So I'm dressing Dwarkadish and cracking up because it was actually quite funny. And then he said, then he had so many devotees he couldn't find service to them for them to perform. So one time, I'm going to steal your line, but actually I heard it also. Brahmananda took Vanaprast. Vanaprast means he was traveling around with Gargamuni to all different places and distributing tapes and other transcendental paraphernalia. So he wound up in front of the Brooklyn Temple, and he came with his van, and it was my first really encounter with him, because I wasn't associating with him until his Vanaprast, that he called it, traveling around the van. So we developed a relationship from that moment on, where either he sold and I bought, or I sold and he bought, and we never accepted the first offer, neither of us. So we always would haggle, and it became a rasa, no matter where we were, what we were doing. So then he gave me a pet name, and it stuck for many, many years, until even in Vrindavan, we lived in the MBT, and he also lived in the MBT, and we became very good friends, actually. And he, no matter where it was, he always called me this nickname. I don't think he even knew my spiritual name that I traveled through billions of births to get from Srila Prabhupada. He would call me Brooklyn. How he came up with that one, I don't know. So we lived at the MBT, and many times he would, every day practically, I would see him in outside in the sun, completely oiled up in a gumsha, waiting for his massage. And this was quite a sight. So every day he took his massage, and we, my husband and I, had also such a nice relationship with Brahmananda. We saw him every day. We became friends, actually. And he also, what Stacia was saying about his disciplinary acts, I always found myself, because of our rasa, I would get heavy with him. I'd bug him about everything. I said, when are you going to go on a diet? Are you getting exercise? I was just like, it was a real friendly, loving kind of relationship. And because of his activities, of all this paraphernalia that he was distributing, because he always had the same answer. I have a broad, bigger, audience. I can hit everyone. The point is to get this news out. What's the difference? I'm going to do it. And, you know, he would take our things. And actually, after a while, I was very happy because I felt like it was true. And he, who am I to argue with Brahmananda? Let him do it. Let him do whatever he wanted to do. So he would go at night. Him and Gargamuni had this little shop across the street from Krishna Balaram Mandir. Every night he would go and he would sit out there in front, and he would, all the devotees would come from all over the world and buy the paraphernalia. And this was his exercise. When I asked him, are you getting exercise every day? He would walk across the street. That was his exercise. So one night he came back. He was coming back. I don't remember who told me this story. It could have been him or Gargamuni or my husband, but he was very, very enthusiastic walking home. And right in front of the MVT, someone, and I'm not going to say who, set up a table, a book table, and it wasn't Srila Prabhupada's books, and I'm not going to say whose books. But Brahmananda looked at that, and he knocked the whole thing over, completely gone. He was actually very happy to do that, and it was very appropriate. So, anyway... I'm very pleased to have known Brahmananda and become friends with him. It was a very sweet, loving relationship that we had. And I hope that if I ever go back to Godhead, he doesn't say to Prabhupada, oh, here comes Brooklyn.
Thank you, Shamapri. Thank you. Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu? No, Gargamuni said recently, you know that there was an ambulance coming to take Brahmananda to the hospital. But he left this world before the ambulance came. And Gargamuni said that Prabhupada told him that because Brahmananda once took Prabhupada out of the hospital, that he would never have to die in the hospital. He said, no.
Brahmananda, for me, as a younger devotee, was like a character that I'd heard about. We're hearing about him. For those of you who never met him, he's a character, and we have our own way that we make that person into an entity. But I was fortunate enough, as Samapriya just explained, in 2002 we purchased an MBT apartment, and Brahmananda and Gargamuni were staying in the one right across from it. So for the 2 years before they had to move over to Ananda Krishnavan, practically every day we were friendly, and actually got to know not just the character that I had developed in my mind through hearing, but actually met the person. Both of them, Gargamuni and Brahmananda, are wonderful people. And they've been following this process that Srila Prabhupada taught them beginning in 1966, their entire lives, through everything that happened to them, in every so many scenarios, who can even imagine, if you know them at all, life's trails has taken them around the planet, has taken them to so many different experiences, being married, not being married, being sannyasi, being whoever they were, both brought up with Cynthia in their home, and very well educated, intelligent people. And when they came to Srila Prabhupada, he taught them a process. And what we got to experience, and I'll end with this because it's unlimited, is we got to see the wine that had been fermented and matured, and saw him in his last days of life in Vrindavan, where the fruit was ripe enough so that finally it fell off the tree and he went to wherever that falls once we're mature and go where we're headed. And I'm sure it was a wonderful place because he was a sweet, very Krishna conscious, loving person. And out of all the people I've ever met. I don't know if I know anyone who loves Srila Prabhupada as much as he did. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu. I wrote to Brahmananda recently, not too long ago, because he said to me, I wrote, Prabhu, this was December 14. Brahmananda Prabhu, I have a question for you. Last time you stayed at my house on Long Island, I asked you to speak about Prabhupada. I remember you saying that Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is 10% faith and 90% common sense. Would you please confirm this? Thank you. So yeah, this was on chat on Facebook. So he replied immediately, actually. And he said, why are you asking? That was his reply. So this one, no, we're chatting. So I said, well, what do I answer now? I was quiet, I didn't say anything. And again he wrote, anyway, it is confirmed. Mukunda Prabhu, you had some association with Brahmananda Prabhu.
We're just going to try to be brief, please.
So I will be brief, and I apologize to so many devotees who are much more senior. I tried to piggyback on Bhutta Bhavanpur because we were in Africa together. East Africa was completely different from West African experience, however. In 1979, Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, who I was working with, this was his first project. He had a restaurant in Washington, D.C. And he came down for morning class one morning, and he picked up the cartels and said, Jai, oh, hold it. Next week, I want that, my name was Akindra at that time. He said, Akindra, you'll go to Africa to help out Brahmananda. Jayaratama. And there was, you know, of course, I was married, everything. We had no idea how this was going to work. So afterwards, of course, he explained to me, your family cannot go because there's nothing there. You know, he's alone and there's no facility yet. So anyways, I had some romantic ideas about Africa for many years, everything. So anyway, I went there and seeing Brahmananda, whom first time I saw Brahmananda was in Henry Street, I think 1972 or 3. So now, of course, seeing him and having a chance to associate with him was very inspiring for me because I'm so much younger of a devotee. And anyway, I'll just tell a few brief stories very quickly. When I got there, Brahmananda knew that I was a little queasy about the wildlife in Africa, you know, snakes, lizards, all these things. So we had one guard that used to guard our apartment. We lived in the apartment that belonged to a factory. And once the dog that was owned by the guard went missing. So all night long, they were searching and making noise, everything. So early in the morning, right after Mangalarti, Brahmananda yells, you know, hey, Akindra, Akindra, they found the dog, come. So I go downstairs. He said, no, come around, they found it. We walked to the back, and the dog had been eaten by a python, which was in the house. So of course, Brahmananda knew I don't do snakes and everything. So of course, I turned around and took off, running the other way.
He also gave us training how to properly do preaching programs. So he said, when we go especially to Indian families' houses, because we would make life members, he said, the system is that when you take prasadam, if you really want more, but you want to act like a sadhu, go like this. Oh, no, thank you. But move your hands so they could fit the spoon in. And when you're actually finished eating, then you actually cover the plate with your hands like this. So, I mean, he had very amazing things in him. After some time, we had preached, and in West Africa, it was quite different. We would go downtown and do Harinam. A huge crowd would gather, as Buddha Bhavan will attest. You preach a little bit, and then you say everything is explained in these books. So we'd have 4 or 5 cases of, especially Science of Self-Realization, we'd hold them up. And then the line would form, and at first it would be orderly. I'll take one. But as the books started to run out, people would get antsy that they wouldn't get a book, and then fights would break out, all kinds of things. So, you know, West African preaching was terrific, actually. So I had this idea that I would do sets of books because I was trained to do that when I was here. So he told me, I'm only giving you one guideline. You have to visit many homes, and because you're by yourself, do not eat or drink anything. So I thought, you know, okay, this is going to be a little difficult because in African culture, they're going to offer you something. That's to only take fruit and water. So I went to one very expensive apartment building in an expensive area of town, which turned out to be where the Senate and Congress live. So I went in, I made a proposal, long story short, that, yeah, I'll take a set. So then here, I'm recommending my colleagues. So then I had a whole list of people to see. Each house you go to, they would give you a little piece of what they call kola nut. I didn't know what it was at the time. So the kola nut, you know, I said, well, it's a nut, it's a fruit, you know, it's not a problem. So I drink water and take the kola nut, but at each house. So then all of a sudden, I was, instead of taking the elevator to get books, I would run downstairs to the van, run back up, and I thought, wow, it's the books, I'm so enthusiastic. So finally, I got back to the temple, and I ran, and I told him, oh, it was amazing, everything happened wonderful. I was upstairs, and I came, and I got the books. He said, wait a minute, what's wrong with you? So he looked at me, and I said, you know, nothing, everything's fine. I mean, the books was just great distribution. He said, did you eat anything? I said, yeah, I just took some nuts. They had some nuts there. So then he breaks out in this laugh and tells me, well, kola nut is an intoxicant. You know, so you can't take it. So, of course, you know, last story. After some time, we had trained a number of the African devotees, and we thought it would be good because Brahmananda insisted that, you know, we all give class. So he very seldom gave class, actually. He would actually have myself, Buddha Bhavan, or any of the other devotees give class. So once we decided to allow one of the African devotees, because we felt they had been trained, you know, give a class, and we chose the devotee who ran our gift shop because he had so much contact with the people who came to visit the temple. So he starts giving the class. Everything is going fine. We're 5 minutes in, 10 minutes in. And then he says, Vishnu Vigada Viganu. Krishna is the cause of all causes. So then I looked over at Srinath, and I looked at Buddha Bhavan, and we said, what verse is it? He said, Vishnu Vigada Viganu. Then we heard, in the back, you could hear this noise like, psh, psh, and it was Brahmananda getting up in his room, because he would keep his door cracked. So then he said, what? Vishnu Vigada Viganu. So then Brahmananda pushes open the door and says, Vishnu Vigada Viganu. So we were trying to tell him it's Savakarana Karnam. He says, yes, that's what I meant. So anyways, there's so many like wonderful, hilarious stories of Brahmananda. But I think a point that Tosan Prabhu made that was very interesting was that Brahmananda treated you. Jai Shri Shri, Ode Shamsundar Devi Ki Jai. That Brahmananda Prabhu always treated you, even though we were such younger devotees except for Buddha Bhavan Prabhu, he always treated us like we were part of his immediate family. He was extremely protective, and if anything came, he would ask, what do you think? And we always thought, wow, he's asking, what do we think? Like this. And of course, under his guidance, I was able to read every one of Srila Prabhupada's books, verse and purport, because the books were stacked up in our living room from donations that were kindly given by so many temples in America. Oh, last thing, Brahmananda, I don't know, somebody said he cooked. Oh, he did. Well, when we went there,
Brahmananda, the first night I was there, we came from a restaurant. Our preaching program in Washington was at a restaurant. So our dinner every day was cooked by Pankajanaba, who's one of the best cooks in ISKCON. And we having pakoras, everything. We got there, the first night I had porridge stew, which was made by one local devotee. Spoon broke everything, long story short. Brahmananda said, oh, no problem. Next day, we're going to have Bengali sabji. So I thought, okay, this is going to get much better. So Brahmananda gets up, he makes oatmeal, then he takes a pan, puts the oil in the pan, he takes all the spices we have, whatever it is, and he starts putting them in the oil. Then he cuts the eggplant, puts the eggplant in the oil with the spices, and then he takes white bread, we cut this white bread, he puts it on top like this, and then after some time, cooks a little bit, flips it over with the spice, and he would look at me and go, Sai Brahmananda Prabhu ki jai.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. Mother Lakshmi Moni Prabhu, please.
Sorry, I should have called you before.
So I've known Brahmananda for a while. You see there's one picture there where we had come down from Buffalo. I think it was in 1969, and we were all dancing. Brahmananda was playing mridanga. I had my cartels up in the air. And as so many of others have said, Brahmananda was kind of a met him in New Vrindavan during a very exciting experience in New Vrindavan, which I won't talk about. But I really got to know Brahmananda better when I went to Vrindavan, and he was living in Vrindavan. And at least once, maybe sometimes twice, while I was there, I would go to his room, and we would sit, and he would talk, and he would tell stories about Srila Prabhupada, and we would talk about different things. I usually would go with Mahadevi, and I found him, he actually came here to Alachua, and he was a history teacher at some point, and so he came a couple of times and gave classes over at the school that I had there, and he talked about how Prabhupada came here and what the currents were in the various passage that Prabhupada made over the Atlantic, and how the currents had changed, and that's why by Prabhupada's mercy, that everything was very calm. And he explained all these things to our students. He was a very, very excellent teacher, actually. He was a very excellent teacher. He was very entertaining, and he knew so much. And he put everything together and made it very animated and exciting. He was very, very encouraging all the time, and he had an amazing memory. And once he was giving class in Vrindavan, and I had, after I left Buffalo under the tutelage of Rupa Nuga Prabhu, we went to Detroit, and then from Detroit we went to Toronto. And the Toronto deities, all the different deities there, had a history, had some amazing story about how they came, and I can't tell you, not relevant now. But there was one set of deities, a set of little Radha and Krishna deities, this big. And they had come in a very interesting way, because one devotee had kind of stolen them from the altar in Montreal. And we got a call from the president in Montreal saying that this devotee had taken the deities and all their paraphernalia and was headed toward Toronto, and we should head her off the pass and take them away. She was going to give them to her son for his birthday. He was 5 or 6. And so now I'm sitting, right, and it's like last year or the year before, I'm sitting in the class in Vrindavan, and Brahmananda Prabhu is telling the story, and he said that there was one devotee, whose name I don't remember, who was in New York in 26 Second Avenue, and he was quite wealthy and a little eccentric, and one day he kind of disappeared for a week, And then all of a sudden he reappeared, and Brahmananda Prabhu said to him, "Where have you been?" So he explained that he had flown to Vrindavan. He had just taken some money, bought a ticket, and then, like, you're talking 1969, you know, never been to India before, and this guy just flew to Vrindavan and went by himself. And he went to Lohi Bazaar, and he purchased two sets of little Radha and Krishna deities. So he came back, and he talked to Brahmananda, told him about his adventure, and he showed him the deities. So Brahmananda was saying that he was very, very in anxiety because Radha and Krishna had come to New York, and they didn't know anything about taking care of anybody, and he didn't want to have the responsibility, he didn't know what to do. So Prabhupada was in Montreal, and so he sent one of the sets, one of the sets of little Radha and Krishna deities he had sent to Montreal. And that's where Prabhupada was at the time, and Srila Prabhupada used those deities to teach Jamuna and others how to dress and take care of the deities. And Jamuna mentions it also in her book. So then, you know, he's telling this story, and I'm thinking, wow, that I wonder if that has anything to do with the deities that came from Montreal to Toronto. And so right after the class, I ran up to him, and I said, you know, Brahmananda Prabhu, could it be? And he said, it must be. Where else could they have come from? So then we pieced it all together, the history that these deities that are in have been on the altar in Toronto for so long, these little teeny deities, they were the first deities that Prabhupada was, you know, actually dressing and things, and they had come from Vrindavan by the carrier of this eccentric devotee. So Brahmananda was always filled with little stories, exciting things that happened, and he was always very, very enlivening and very encouraging. We were talking to him about writing another book after Swamiji, because Swamiji was put together by Satyaraj for an outside audience. But as someone mentioned, there were a lot of in-house things that Brahmananda could have shared. We encouraged him to put them on his computer and speak them, and we would, you know, type them later. And I don't know if he did, but I hope someone gets into that. Anyway, he was an amazing, amazing devotee. He was an icon in ISKCON history. And I'm very grateful to have become his friend a little bit and gotten to know him and gotten to hear him speak many, many times. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Mother Lakshmi Mani, it was supposed to end at 9 o'clock. Should we continue?
How many more?
132. Now we have a few more. Is Mother Mukhya here? Hansarupa? I'm going to tell a quick pastime, Brahmananda Gadi. That Brahmananda was walking with Prabhupada, and there was a boy, a guest, and this boy was a macrobiotic. I don't even know if they still exist. They do. And this boy was telling Prabhupada, you know, I like your chanting, I like the philosophy, but this white flour, white sugar. And Prabhupada said, oh, you see, our Brahmananda here, he eats this food and he is very strong. You know, they keep walking, you know, and a couple more minutes and the boy, you know, I like the philosophy and I like the chanting, but this white flour and white sugar. And Prabhupada again, our Brahmananda, he is very strong. And then the third time the boy brings it up, and Prabhupada says, you see our Brahmananda? He's so strong. If I tell him to kill you, he will kill you. And Brahmananda said, it's the order of the spiritual master. I got ready. But the boy got the message. He didn't say anything else. So, Hansarupa, or Gadi, would you like to read, Prabhupada? Gadi Prabhu sent his homage to Brahmananda Prabhu.
Dear Brahmananda Prabhu, may you accept my humble obeisances one more time. All glories to one who is dear to you. All glories to the one who is dear to you, and the one most dear to me is Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My first encounter with a devotee was with your brother, Gargamuni, who in 1970 was living with my friends, Amarendra and Gayatri, sleeping in the closet of a very small duplex just two blocks from the UF campus. One evening, I knocked on the door and suddenly Gargamuni opened it. His presence scared the life out of me, the beginning of the end, so to speak. You were in Tallahassee, just 3 hours away from Gainesville, but we never met then. In fact, you were to travel the world carrying Srila Prabhupada's order, presenting Krishna to the African continent, making success from whomever you met. The intriguing reports about your service reached us regularly, even without Facebook. Through the years, we got to know each other, meeting at various moments, usually where Srila Prabhupada was appearing. Once in Philadelphia, in an awkward situation, one guest, an Indian professor, was causing all of our hearts to race in anxiety, verbally abusing Srila Prabhupada, being very offensive to him for the sake of impressing his two or three students with him. The problem escalated to the point that something must be done with this man. That's when we got to see your protective mood as you escorted the, quote, gentleman out and away. What a feeling of relief for those left in the room. And as a sidebar, that Indian professor later became a devotee of Srila Prabhupada. Safe and secure, that is the feeling I always felt around you, genuine, safe, and protected. That's what I remembered most of your association, feeling safe in the presence of such a devoted person to Srila Prabhupada. Our last encounter was in Vrindavan in 2008. I was given the task of trying to convince you to come and speak at Prabhupada's disappearance event. As much as I pleaded in every which way, you would not relent to come. At that time, there was some unfortunate conflict with the GBC, and you looked to me in the eyes. You looked me in the eyes and said, "Prabhupada told me to never go where you're not wanted." At that time, I felt your sadness and your strength, but always the same feeling of protection. For that moment, I applied that same principle in my life. Safe to say that leaving your body in Sri Vrindavan Dham was wonderfully executed by His divine grace. Krishna made that very clear in your case. After all this time, you're going to leave Vrindavan? No, this is not the way. You will be leaving this body today. All the Shastras have made this expressly clear regarding the soul's departure in Sri Vrindavan Dham, so bravo. My friend, all success to you. May you now reside in that supremely safe and secure dust at Krishna's lotus feet. Thank you for your valuable service, association, and memories. Your affectionate friend and admirer, Gaudi Das.
Is Balavanta here? Shamapriya, Shanaka Prabhu? Shaunaka. Want to speak? Please come. Actually, Brahmananda is so dear, we can stay here whole night.
Hare Krishna. I just wanted to mention a few things from the books that were really touched me. Couple little paragraphs. So, in 1960, Brahmananda had an accident in school, but he got an insurance settlement in 1967. And this is so he's saying, quote, "The amount was $5,000, which was a lot in those days because a new car cost $2,500. So you could get two cars for the amount of money he had." So Brahmananda goes, "Swamiji was in India, and I wrote, offering the amount to him. He replied that I should immediately publish teachings of Lord Chaitanya with the money. So I retrieved the manuscript." So he got the manuscript, had the book published in Japan, and then later rented the truck and went down to the dock and got all the books and picked them up when it was published. And I thought this was very astounding. So they were, the devotees were selling the happening record. That's the record that Rupa Nuga Prabhu was showing us? That's the happening record? Okay. They were selling it to people. They were getting orders, and they were mailing them out. And then they said, oh, look, this order is from right here in Manhattan. In fact, it's from Macmillan Publishing. And Prabhupada immediately said, do not mail that record. Brahmananda, I want you to go and personally deliver it. And then Prabhupada said, when you deliver the album, tell them that you were a disciple of a guru from India and that he has translated the Bhagavad Gita. They will publish it. Do not worry. They will publish it. So Brahmananda was stunned. Prabhupada seemed so confident. So Brahmananda the next day went in a suit and a tie down to Macmillan. It was at 866 3rd Avenue, just off 52nd Street. And he had really huge expectations, and then all of a sudden he was crushed to understand that the person that ordered the album was not a big executive in Macmillan. It was just a low-level entry worker. So Brahmananda says, it was just a simple worker who had some interest in mantras. So Brahmananda was giving it to him, and then all of a sudden, a young executive came in the midst and was introduced to Brahmananda. This is James O'Shea Wade, our senior editor. Brahmananda seized the moment. I am a disciple of a guru from India, he said, trying to repeat Swamiji's words verbatim. He has translated the Bhagavad Gita. What? Wade responded incredulously. We've just published a full line of spiritual books, and we were looking for a Bhagavad Gita to fill out the set. Brahmananda's mouth dropped open. And then the man continued. Then he thought of what Prabhupada had said. They will publish it. Do not worry. And then Wade continued. You bring in the manuscript tomorrow, and we will publish it, sight unseen. So the next day, Brahmananda didn't bring it in. Prabhupada did. He came personally, and that's how they published it. Bhagavad Gita.
Okay, we have one last person now. We're going to end at 9:15 because now it's time to go. Okay, please. Let her come first, and then you have to divide 5 minutes between the two of you.
I ask permission from all the senior devotees just to say a couple of things. Brahmananda Prabhu was a member of Prasadarians. This is a group on Facebook that has more than 7,000 followers, and we've been administrating for a few years. He came to become a member last year, and I have 3 entries about Prasadam. He wrote, September 14, bread balls was one of the items Srila Prabhupada taught us to prepare in the kitchen at 22nd Avenue in 1966. I didn't write this, but he wrote later that Achyutananda Prabhu was here in Alachua and that he probably can help us make that preparation. October 8th, this was, this was last year, September 2, 14, and then October 2, 14. Srila Prabhupada, he said, once told me that the best vegetable dish is one that tastes like non-vegetarian. Therefore, we use ghee in everything we cook. It is, after all, an animal food. Srila Prabhupada used to give the example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose favorite dish was Bengali ur dal. He used to say that, Prabhupada talking, the Bengal population is much attracted to eating fish, but if I can introduce them to ur dal, then they will give up eating fish. This is Brahmananda quoting Prabhupada. And the last entry I got from him, it was May 11. I had no idea how sick he was. And he said, in India, this is the group of prasadam, so we speak about different preparations and everything. So there was a discussion about cooking substitutes or things that remind us of things that we ate before. So Brahmananda said, in India, the word meat is not used. Rather, is referred to as non-vegetarian. And then he ends. How much, and this is a word for you, how much euphemistic can you get? Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Brahmananda Prabhu, for giving us some association through this page. So this is a good cause to be on Facebook. Hare Krishna. Oh, Hare Krishna. My name is Satyavati. Brahmananda Prabhu used to stay at my house in the 90s whenever he was selling Prabhupada's books. And now that I hear the stories about his cooking, I'm glad that I am the one that I was always cooking for him. He was at my house, I remember, one Ekadashi. And I have cooked about 4 or 5 preparations. And he said to me, oh, no khichdi? Because that's what I normally will make, khichdi or rice and dal. So I said, well, it's Ekadashi. And he said, yes, Prabhupada says Ekadashi is feasting, no fasting. And my daughter was at the memorial in California last Saturday. She told me, went on for about 6 hours. And they have a wonderful opulent feast. They bake cookies and a cake for Ramananda Prabhu. And she said to me that I was in the temple room listening to the offerings when I look at the picture and I thought, I know that Shobhi devotee. He used to stay at our house when I was a child. And I will go in his room sometimes because the light was on and I will ask him, do you always travel with all these books? And Brahmananda said, ah, but these are Prabhupada's books. Do you want to hear a Prabhupada story? And she will go, yeah. She was probably 8 or 9 at the time. She's 29 now. So Brahmananda Prabhu will tell her a Prabhupada pastime. He was also there when we had one of our festivals for Lord Ram. And he will normally just chant japa while I was taking care of the deities or preparing the offering. And then he will sit down at the table and he will talk to me about the preaching in Africa. He was very interested, like everyone says, about the second generation, perhaps because of my children. And he wanted to make sure that they read Prabhupada's books, that they learn Sanskrit, but most of all, that they learn to love Prabhupada. And he said to me that they'll learn to love Prabhupada if you teach them by example. When they see that you love Prabhupada, they will learn that, just like they learn to love their grandfather. So he gave me that example. So thank you so much, and thank you for being here. Hare Krishna. All glories to Brahmananda.
Thank you all for coming, and thank you, Cindy, and thank you, Michelle. And all of you, it was wonderful to remember Brahmananda. We have everything recorded. It's going to be on krishna.com online tomorrow or the day after. And if you want to give me your email address, I can communicate with you and send you a link. Hare Krishna.